The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. The case brought by plaintiffs in Texas and attorneys general in 18 Republican-led states claims that the law is unconstitutional. Wisconsin was part of that lawsuit until the Evers administration pulled out of it last year. The case hinges on a familiar point, the individual mandate. The court ruled in 2012 that it fell under Congress's power to levy taxes. But since then, the fine for not having health insurance has been reduced to zero, which left some justices questioning the legal standing of the new case. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act and how justices responded to the arguments in the case so far? Do you want to see the law stay in place? Do you think it should be struck down? If you're a Republican, do you think this is a battle the party should be fighting? If you're a Democrat, what do you want to see a new administration push for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amy Howe is co-founder of SCOTUS blog. She reports on the court there and at amylhowe.com. Amy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
Well, I gave a super Cliff's Notes version there, Amy, of this this case. Can you tell us about what's at stake, the possible outcomes? It seems like there's three ranging from no change at all to the ACA is gone completely. What are some of the likely outcomes here?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways that this could go. So one is that the Supreme Court could say that the individual mandate and the defenders of the law don't like to call it the mandate because part of their argument is no one has to do anything now because there's no penalty if you don't get health insurance after Congress took away the penalty back in 2017 is constitutional, just like the Supreme Court said it was back in 2012, to the idea that the Supreme Court could say, well, we're not going to get to the merits of your challenge because the individuals who are challenging the mandate and then Texas and the group of, for lack of a better term, we'll call them red states who are challenging the mandate don't have what's known as standing, a legal right to sue. There's a scenario in which they could say the mandate is unconstitutional, but the rest of the Affordable Care Act can stay in place. And then there's what Democratic senators, particularly during the Amy Coney Barrett hearings, sort of portrayed as the doomsday scenario in which a majority on the Supreme Court says the mandate is unconstitutional and the rest of the Affordable Care Act has to go with it.
And that's
so
the argument.
All kinds of things that could happen.
That's the argument from plaintiffs and what they're hoping for, right? The idea that the mandate has to go and it's not severable from the rest of the Affordable Care Act. And at least one or two courts along the way agreed with them, right?
Exactly. So the Texas and the other states and the individual challengers went to federal court in Texas, and a U.S. district judge there, Reed O'Connor, said, you're right. The mandate now is unconstitutional if there's no penalty for not having health insurance. Back in 2012, the Supreme Court said the mandate was constitutional because it was a tax. It can't be a tax anymore because it doesn't raise any money. So it's unconstitutional. And the rest of it has to go as well. So the federal government, the Trump administration, was not defending the mandate. California and a group of, for lack of a better term, I'll call them blue states, entered the case to defend the law along with the U.S. House of Representatives. They appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. And the Fifth Circuit took sort of a middle ground. They agreed with the challengers that the mandate is unconstitutional now, but they sent it back to Judge O'Connor and they said, can you take another look and see whether any parts of the law can still survive?
Talking to Amy Howe, longtime Supreme Court watcher, about oral arguments in a challenge to the Affordable Care Act before the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. Okay, Amy, I've been told by a lot of people, I think probably including you somewhere along the way, you can't always tell what justices are thinking by the questions and concerns they raise in oral arguments. That said, can we tell what they're thinking based on what they had to say yesterday?
Well, you can. It is particularly difficult these days. Now, the Supreme Court, because of the pandemic, is holding oral arguments by telephone. And because it would be, kind of a zoo, the Supreme Court's what's known as a hot bench. When they're in the courtroom, you can, when you argue there, you can expect to have the questions flying sort of fast and furious. And if they were all on the phone and couldn't see each other and couldn't see the lawyer who was arguing, it would be kind of a hot mess. People would just be interrupting each other constantly. So what they are doing during the pandemic, they started this in May and have been continuing it ever since, is they take turns. They start with the Chief Justice, John Roberts, and then they move on in order of seniority. So they go on to Justice Clarence Thomas, who's been on the court the longest of any of the justices, Justice Stephen Breyer, and so on, all the way down to the court's newest justice, Amy Coney Barrett. And when everybody gets, you know, sort of a specific amount of time, it's harder to know what's on their mind. But having said that, you know, it did seem, I guess, that my takeaway after yesterday's oral argument, and again, it's risky to make predictions after oral argument. We saw that back in 2012 when everyone came away from the oral argument in the Obamacare case thinking that the Supreme Court was going to strike Obamacare down. And the Chief Justice dramatically joined the court's former liberal justices in upholding the mandate as a tax. Sort of the takeaway is that we're not quite sure exactly how they're going to do it, but it does seem like that even, you know, even if they say that the mandate is unconstitutional, the rest of the Affordable Care Act will survive.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Eli is with us in La Crosse. Eli, hi.
Hi. I just want to say, like, so I'm a pretty moderate conservative, and I voted Republican in the last election, but I think the Affordable Care Act should stay. I don't think that the mandate is okay. Why are we trying to penalize people who, for the most cases, can't afford insurance already? But as the rest of the law stands, I think that it's perfectly good that we keep it. Like, I'm 21. I'm lucky enough that I can stay on my parents' insurance till I'm 26. And if the ACA gets struck down, I have to wait an entire year for open enrollment to get insurance in my work.
Eli, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Now, the penalty under the mandate has gone away. Congress changed that. So, Amy, does the court, when they're looking at this, look at things like the impact this would have on Americans like Eli, or, you know, and what it would mean for the healthcare situation? Or are they really strictly looking at, you know, legislative intent and constitutional readings?
Well, it's an interesting question. And, you know, so on the one hand, they're looking at legal issues. But on the other hand, it's actually kind of hard to separate how it works in the real, in this particular case, how it works in the real world and experiences like Eli's from what they're trying to do, particularly when it comes to the question, if there are at least five of them who decide that the mandate is unconstitutional, what to do next. And this was something that we heard at oral argument a couple of times. You know, back in 2012, the federal government, then it was the Obama administration, said, you know, the mandate is an essential part of Obamacare, because the idea was under Obamacare, insurance companies have to give insurance to everyone, even if they have pre-existing conditions. They have to do it at a reasonable price, even if you know, people have health problems. And to make this affordable for health insurance companies, they said, we're going to make everybody buy health insurance so that you'll have healthy people and sick people all together. And it turns out that since Congress took away the tax for failing to get health insurance, people are still buying it. And so Don Verrilli, who was the Solicitor General, the government's top lawyer back in 2012, defending the mandate, was actually back in court yesterday. And I'm putting in court in air quotes, because, of course, nobody is in the Supreme Court building right now because of the pandemic. And he said, look, you know, when Congress passed the mandate, they thought they needed it as a stick. And it turns out they don't. And so it is actually a case in which they do look at the real world impact, and they do look at what Congress intended.
Let's bring on another caller. Andrew is with us in Appleton. Andrew, hello.
Hi. I was just wondering, to what extent do you think the strike down of an individual mandate would mean to being a big blow to the Affordable Care Act? I know, as you've just mentioned, that it was really used as a necessary precaution as a portion of the healthcare law, but I want to know, to what extent will the Affordable Care Act still be workable, and what what how does this harm it in any way?
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. And as you were saying, Amy, that is one of the big questions here in this scenario that Andrew's describing, where the mandate, the penalty-less mandate gets struck down. It sounds like the argument it sounds like the case is being made that, yeah, it does survive. The rest of it does stand on its own without the mandate. Is that some of the argument we're hearing?
That's right. That's right. So, you know, when courts are trying to decide, like, if you, it's a quite the legal doctrine is called severability. And when courts are trying to decide what to do, if you've got one provision that's unconstitutional, you know, what happens to the rest of it? The real question is, what would Congress have intended? And here the argument by the defenders of the mandate is, you know, well, clearly Congress took away the penalty for failing to get health insurance. So they left the rest of the law in place. They intended for the law to survive. And so, you know, I think as a legal matter, people think that even if the mandate is unconstitutional, the rest of the Affordable Care Act will survive. And one of the things they point at, because the counterargument from the challengers is, no, you kept telling us back in 2012 that the metaphor was this three-legged stool. You had, you know, pre-existing conditions, you know, affordability and the mandate. And if you took out one of the legs, the whole thing would fall down, that Congress thought the mandate was essential. And it turns out, you know, the amendment to the Affordable Care Act that zeroed out the penalty for not getting health insurance was passed in 2017. It took effect at the beginning of 2019. So they've had almost 2 years where there isn't a penalty for not getting health insurance. And it seems like it's worked out okay.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Supreme Court reporter Amy Howe right now, looking at the arguments the court heard yesterday in a challenge to the Affordable Care Act. Still time to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the ways that the justices talked about the Affordable Care Act, about what's at stake in this case? Do you have questions about the questions that the justices were asking along the way? How do you expect the court to rule if you want to make a prediction? Do you want to see the Affordable Care Act struck down all or in part? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're picking up our talk with Amy Howe, co-founder of SCOTUS Blog, where she writes about the Supreme Court. We're looking at yesterday's oral arguments about the Affordable Care Act and this ongoing challenge. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong. It seems sometimes like at least some justices, and maybe Chief Justice Roberts in particular, I don't know, they don't want a whole lot of drama. They don't want to do a huge thing that overturns a big law passed by Congress. They might make the argument that if Congress wants to change the thing, they should change it. Is that a factor in anyone's thinking on the court here, do you think?
That's right. You know, some of your listeners may remember, it's been a while now, but back when the Chief Justice was at his own confirmation back in 2005, he, you know, tried to compare the role of a Supreme Court justice to being an umpire. We just call balls and strikes. We don't, you know, we don't play the game. And so there was a moment where he was talking to the lawyer for one of the challengers, and he said, you know, talking about this question of what happens if they decide the mandate is unconstitutional. And he said, you know, basically Congress only, you know, changed the penalty. They didn't repeal the whole law. They may have wanted the Supreme Court to strike down the whole law, but that's not our job. That's Congress's job. You know, I think he really regards it as being a positive thing for public perceptions. As the Chief Justice, you know, he's concerned about public perceptions of the Supreme Court as a nonpartisan institution. And I think he feels like in a case like this, sort of the less done, the better in many ways.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Glenn is with us in Green Bay. Glenn, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to bring up?
Well, my question was, you know, the economy has been better over the last, I don't know, a couple of years. And I know that the mandate, you had said that the mandate turns out maybe we don't need it. My question is, if we're into a recession, and let's say the economy is poor and more people are out of work, would that then strain the system and make the mandate more necessary?
Oh, interesting, Glenn. Thanks for the call. Amy, is that something that either side was bringing up, that, you know, maybe the years, or I guess almost 2 years now that it's worked without the mandate, might not represent future performance?
That's an interesting question. I can't recall seeing it, but it's certainly something, you know, I think there are, you know, there are other mechanisms in place as part of the Affordable Care Act. You know, there are subsidies to help people who can't afford to buy health insurance, buy health insurance. On the other hand, you know, that was one of the arguments that the state made in terms of why it had a right to sue, was that as a result of the mandate, then the, you know, it had more people signing up for Medicaid than otherwise would have. So, you know, I guess it could work both ways.
Thanks for the call, Glenn, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Amy Howe about the U.S. Supreme Court oral arguments yesterday on a challenge to the Affordable Care Act. Okay, Amy, you said one possible outcome is that the court decides, yeah, the plaintiffs here don't have standing, so there's no case to be had. That would mean they're not ruling on the merits of the case at all, which means what? I guess some plaintiffs somewhere could just start the whole thing over again?
Theoretically, I think the question would be who those plaintiffs would be. You know, the individual plaintiffs in this case had argued that they had a right to sue because they felt like they were compelled to buy health insurance, but they didn't want to. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure who would be an individual plaintiff who could bring a lawsuit if these plaintiffs couldn't. There, you know, there's some discussion about the states, you know, perhaps they might theoretically have a right to sue, but they hadn't presented enough evidence. You know, another sort of data point to keep in mind would be that if the Supreme Court said that these particular plaintiffs didn't have a right to sue and throughout the lawsuit, you know, somebody could file a lawsuit later, you know, it could come back to court. It would be, in all likelihood by then, assuming that things, you know, that a Biden administration in the Justice Department rather than a Trump administration, and the Biden administration presumably would opt to defend the law, unlike the Trump administration. I'm not sure that it would necessarily make a difference in the outcome of the case if it got to the Supreme Court, but it certainly would, with the dynamics of the lawsuit, might be different.
Thanks for calling in, Glenn. Now, Amy, the severability argument, you, I think, wrote that some of the arguments were hinging on the precedent it would set if the Supreme Court agreed that if you get rid of the mandate, the whole thing has to go. The whole law is not severable. It doesn't survive without the mandate. Concerns that if you start applying that to any bill Congress might pass, like a big omnibus spending bill, for example, concerns that that could lead to a lot of chaos. What were some of the arguments there?
So this was actually with regard to standing.
Well, that was a standing. I'm sorry.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, so the individual plaintiff said they had standing because they had to buy health insurance. They didn't want to. The state said, well, we've got paperwork. We've got people signing up for Medicaid. The federal government had this theory about why the challengers had a legal right to sue that involved, you know, that they would be injured by a different provision in the Affordable Care Act that would be invalidated if the mandate were deemed unconstitutional and the whole ACA were struck down. And Justice Elena Kagan was a little bit incredulous. You know, her reaction was basically, are you kidding me? She said, you know, the government is usually trying to keep people out of court. And here you've got this really expansive view and that would really expand who could come into court. Because, as you say, sometimes we've got these massive omnibus laws that address all kinds of different things, and somebody could come into court and say, well, you know, I think that provision is unconstitutional and it doesn't injure me, but it would, if the whole law was struck down, it would invalidate this provision, which does injure me.
Got it. Thanks for setting me straight on that. Now, Amy, does the court give us any indication on when they might rule on this case?
No, and I think a lot depends on exactly how they rule on it. If they were to decide, for example, that the challengers didn't have standing, that they didn't have a right to sue, That might be something that, you know, we wouldn't certainly be getting it in the next couple of weeks, but we might get sooner rather than, you know, one of these late June decisions that we've become accustomed to. You know, sort of the more steps they take, you know, if they were to decide that the challengers do have standing, the mandate is unconstitutional, but then, you know, nonetheless, the rest of the Affordable Care Act can survive. There's a lot of moving parts, and there's going to be a lot of disagreement among the justices, you know, multiple, you know, concurring and dissenting opinions there. And that could take a while.
And just briefly, Amy, I think a lot of people might have assumed a 6-3 conservative majority would doom the Affordable Care Act, whether they were happy about that or not. It's we don't know the outcome, but it just sounds like it's not necessarily so.
I think that's right. You know, I think, you know, we do think of, you know, the sort of the conventional wisdom in the public is that sort of the court's a 6-3 conservative majority. Therefore, they're going to vote to strike down the Affordable Care Act. You know, certainly that was the picture that Democratic senators tried to paint during the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. You know, I will say it is not, it is pretty much what I think sort of the legal experts had expected all along. Going into the Supreme Court term, lots of sort of law schools and institutions will do these previews where they look ahead at the Supreme Court term. And in the discussions of the cases, people, you know, didn't necessarily think that the Affordable Care Act was doomed. There was one comment that wound up being quoted a lot at Georgetown University Law School, my alma mater, the former Solicitor General Paul Clement, who actually challenged the Affordable Care Act back in 2012, you know, said, I think it's going to be a real uphill struggle to invalidate the whole Affordable Care Act. And it looks like he may well be right.
Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
That's Amy Howe, co-founder of SCOTUS Blog. Read her work at amylhowe.com.